We're going to be looking at two psalms that I think very possibly could have been written by David during a season of uncertainty, of trial, of real danger that we find recorded for us at the end of 1 Samuel chapter 23. David has fled from the wilderness of Ziph. The Ziphites have double-crossed him. He flees Saul into an area known as Maon. It's there that Saul catches word, sends his armies, and David is very much on the verge of being captured, which would not be well. It would not be good for David. It would not be good for his men. They would be arrested and tried as being traitors. David, no doubt, would have been executed. Saul, paranoid, thinking that David was seeking to take the throne, not fully realizing that God had given it to David. So the scene sets itself up where you're like, what's going to happen? Like, if not for the divine intervention of God on David's behalf, he's going to be caught. You see, what happened is there was kind of a mountain area, and David's on one side with, you know, a scout up on the top, and Saul has come down, and he's on the other side with a scout on the top, and Saul's scout saying, David's armies are over here, and so they go, you know, clockwise, and David's been, oh, Saul's armies are over there, and so they move up to 12 o'clock, and then, oh, well, no, they went this way, and so they're kind of going around and around this mountain range, kind of like a carousel, merry-go-round. Now, at some point in this, inevitably, Saul is going to realize what's happening, and he's just going to split his superior army, because he outnumbered David tremendously, into a north and south campaign, and they would entrap David. So this is just a matter of time. The clock is ticking. David, his back is against the wall. Again, if not for some intervention of God, there's no way of escape. Now, as the chapter closes itself out, a messenger comes to Saul with word that the Philistines have invaded the land. He is king of Israel, and thus his pet project chasing David throughout the wilderness, even though he can taste victory, he's got to abandon the endeavor. He's got to go bigger issues at play. He's got to go deal with the Philistines. And indeed, David is able to escape. He leaves this area, chapter 24, we find him in the region of En-Gedi down near the Dead Sea. Again, two different psalms, Psalm 69, Psalm 64. We can't say with 100% certainty were written during this particular experience. And yet I think as we read through them, they're very much a reflection of what David was likely going through emotionally during this very dangerous season of life. In fact, Psalm 69, the heading, it's an urgent plea for help in trouble. And again, an urgent plea. It's to the chief musician, set to the lilies, which is probably a common tune, a psalm of David. It's a lengthy psalm here. It's 36 verses. So we're going to kind of minimize our commentary. We're going to kind of just read our way through it. I'll throw little nuggets here or there for some context, but just try to get a feel, our idea. We're not doing an exposition of these psalms, but we're just looking at psalms that might be gives us insight into David's heart during the stories that we're looking at in our Harmonies series. This psalm begins, "Save me, O God." He gets right to the point, doesn't he? "Waste no breath. Save me, O God. For the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in deep mire where there is no standing. I've come into deep waters where the floods overflow me. I am weary with my crying. My throat is dry. My eyes fell while I wait for my God. Those who hate me without a cause are more than the hairs of my head. They are mighty ones who would destroy me, being my enemies wrongfully. Though I have stolen nothing, I still must restore it. I'm sinking. I'm being buried. This is all happening to me without justice. Verse 5, "Oh God, you know my foolishness. My sins are not hidden from you. Let not those who wait for you, O Lord God of hosts, be ashamed because of me. Let not those who seek you be confounded because of me, O God of Israel, because for your sake I have borne reproach. Shame has covered my face. I've become a stranger to my brothers, an alien to my mother's children, because zeal for your house has eaten me up, and the reproaches of those who reproach you have fallen on me. When I wept and chastened my soul with fasting, that became my reproach. I also made sackcloth my garment. I became a byword to them. Those who sit in the gates speak against me. I am the song of the drunkards. You're in a tough place. You know, even the drunk people are singing about how bad I've got it. As for me, my prayer is to you. O Lord, in the acceptable time, O God, in the multitude of your mercy, hear me in the truth of your salvation. I like that. In the acceptable time. I mean, David is, the clock is ticking, his back is against the wall, but he, like, you're in control, your providence remains in the acceptable time, in the multitude of your mercy, hear me, in the truth of your salvation, and deliver me out of the mire. Let me not sink. Let me be delivered from those who hate me and out of the deep waters. Let not the flood water overflow me, nor let the deep swallow me up, and let not the pit shut its mouth on me. Hear me, O Lord. For your loving kindness is good. Turn to me according to the multitude of your tender mercies, and do not hide your face from your servant, for I am in trouble. The honesty here of David. I'm in trouble, man. I don't know what to do. Hear me speedily. Draw near to my soul and redeem it. Deliver me because of my enemies. You know my reproach, my shame, and my dishonor. My adversaries are all before you. Reproach has broken my heart. I am full of heaviness. I looked for someone to take pity, but there was none. And for comforters, I found none. They also gave me gall for my food. For my thirst, they gave me vinegar to drink. Nobody has come to my aid. I am all alone. Let their table become a snare before them, and their well-being a trap. Let their eyes be darkened so that they may not see, and make their loins, their undergarments, shake continually. Pour out your indignation upon them. Let your wrathful anger take hold of them. Let their dwelling place be desolate. Let no one live in their tents, for they persecute the ones you have struck, and talk of grief of those who you have wounded, and iniquity, add iniquity to their iniquity. And let them not come into your righteousness. Let them be blotted out of the book of the living and not be written with the righteous. He's kind of saying, send them to hell, straight to hell. But I am poor and sorrowful. Let your salvation, O God, set me up high. I will praise the name of God with a song. I will magnify him with thanksgiving. Yes, this shall please the Lord better than an ox or a bull, which has horns or hooves. Again, his praise is his thanksgiving more than sacrifice. The humble shall see this and be glad. And you who seek God, your heart shall live. Why? For the Lord hears the poor and does not despise his prisoners. Let heaven and earth praise him, the seas and everything that moves in them. For God will save Zion and build the cities of Judah, and they may dwell there and possess it. Also the descendants of his servants shall inherit it, and those who love his name shall dwell in it. That again, God will not just hear his cry and respond to his cry and intervene on behalf of him, but that there is a home being prepared. A wonderful arc, a beautiful psalm, a bit lengthy. One more I just want to work in, Psalm 64, not nearly as long. We read its heading, oppressed by the wicked, but rejoicing in the Lord. And I like that. Oppressed, but rejoicing. Can you say that? That while you're being oppressed, that you can still rejoice? That you can take joy? That you can still praise? Again, David here in the wilderness of Maon, his back against the wall, being chased by Saul. Things looking probably their darkest yet. To the chief musician, a psalm of David, he begins, he says, hear my voice, O God, in my meditation. Preserve my life from fear of the enemy. Hide me from the secret plots of the wicked, from the rebellion of the workers of iniquity, who sharpen their tongue like a sword. and bend their bows to shoot their arrows, bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the blameless. Suddenly, they shoot at him and do not fear. He's saying, I'm in a tough spot and people are slandering me and my name's being driven through the mud. He says, they encourage themselves in an evil matter. They talk of laying snares secretly. They got plans against me, God. They say, who will see them? He'll be caught. We've got him. They devise iniquities. We have perfected a shrewd scheme, they might say. Both the inward thought and the heart of man are deep. But God, I love this. They have all these evil intents. They have all these evil plans. They have all these evil schemes. They have all this ill will planned for David. He says, verse 7, though, but God shall shoot at them with an arrow. Suddenly, they shall be wounded. God will intervene. God will take up the fight. So he will make them stumble over their own tongue. What they've planned will come back around to bite them. All who see them shall flee away. People will know that it was God. All men shall fear and shall declare the work of God. For they shall wisely consider his doings. God, you intervene and you intervene in such a radical way that no one can attribute it to me or anyone else but your divine intervention. And then he closes this. He says, the righteous shall be glad in the Lord. And not just be glad in the Lord. Again, rejoicing in the midst of opposition, but should trust in him. Should trust. Again, David keeps coming back to this, if you've been following, the idea of trusting God. Trusting God. Do you place your trust in God? And trust is the muscle of faith. We trust that in which we place our faith. I would not trust a stool that I had no faith in if that stool had three legs or if one of the legs was wobbly. Again, we trust that which is reliable. And can you think of anyone more reliable than God? The righteous shall be glad in the Lord and trust in him. And all the upright in heart shall glory. Again, in Maon, David's in a tight spot, tough spot. And yet God intervenes. God preserves him. God saves him. God answers his prayer. Hear my voice, O God, in my meditation. And the Lord does. And he writes a song, a beautiful song, expressing his emotion, his heart, in the midst of the struggle. If you're oppressed, can you rejoice? If you've enjoyed these psalms, please check out calvary316.tv/histories. You can find not just the Bible study related to these things, 1 Samuel chapter 23, but you can also watch these videos of the Psalms, likely reflecting the heart of David through these experiences. God bless.